welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and opening up tomorrow at the Meadows Museum of Art on the campus of Centenary College is the exhibit Creole World, Photographs of New Orleans and Latin Caribbean Sphere by Richard Sexton. And joining me now in our Knoll Foundation studios are Richard Sexton, the artist of this exhibit, along with Dr. Lisa Nicoletti, who is a professor of art history and visual studies, as well as the co-director of the Meadows Museum of Art. Richard and Lisa, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Great
so
to be here.
So let's go into a little bit of your history, if we could, Richard. Particularly, what was it that drew you to photography as a not only an avocation, but as a career, as a, you know, actually making your living at doing photography? When did this happen? Was this something from early childhood, or did you get inspired later in life?
Well, you know, like so many kids, I had a camera as a child and would take pictures, but I bought my first serious camera when I was in college, and I almost immediately decided, okay, this is what I wanted to do. It played into my sense of adventure and discovery, and I don't know, it was almost kind of automatic. I didn't think about it too much.
No, was this at Emory College that you...
It was at Emory University. Okay. When I bought my first camera and decided, hey, let me see what's going to happen here.
Now, were you studying visual arts at that time, or were you on another track and just decided that somehow this was what inspired you? I mean, this drew you over.
No, I wasn't. I mean, Emory didn't have an art department at that time, and I'd previously been an engineering major. So I kind of backed into photography, I'd say. Okay.
But that's ironic, engineering, because now your photography a lot is visually about things that man constructs, you know. I mean, there's a lot of other things in there, but there's that connection to human design, to human capturing of human design.
That's right. I think in my work in particular, the subjects that I gravitate to tend to be the built environment, the industrial environment, and culture. And it's a whole mix of things, but, right. You know.
So after Emory, you went out to San Francisco and studied at the Art Institute out there for a while?
I did for a year, and I was a dropout. I didn't like art school.
Oh,
but I love San Francisco, and okay. I stayed. I started my career there. I lived there for 13 years.
Well, let's say you didn't like art school, but you are an artist. So art school necessarily, is it the Dead Poet Society thing where they teach you how to kill a poem, or you wanted to learn how to live a poem?
Well, I don't know about the poetry side of it, but yeah. I thought that it just wasn't what I expected. I had not taken a class in studio art to that point. So okay. I go out there expecting one very particular kind of experience, and it wasn't there for me. And a lot of it probably had to do with the particular art school that I had chosen to go to. And art education has changed a great deal since the 1970s. Believe me, it's different now.
Well, now, while out in San Francisco, though, you began a big part of your career. You did a couple of books out there, including on the cottages out there. Could you tell us how you got inspired with that?
Well, I did, I did three books. My first three books were done in San Francisco, and it was in San Francisco that I first formed a relationship with Chronicle Books, which was a very small upstart publishing house at that time, and it grew into quite a large international one, and I sort of benefited from that growth. But I did three books in San Francisco, which included the one that you mentioned, the cottage book, which was about cottage living in the San Francisco Bay Area.
And from there, Victorian art is another subject matter that you touched on as well.
I collaborated with an architectural historian, Randolph Delahanty. We did a book called In the Victorian Style, which was about the Victorians of San Francisco.
And that actually, I mean, within San Francisco, that's a huge part of their, I guess, as it is throughout Louisiana and many other parts, Victorian culture still thrives on. And there's actually a boutique industry of refurbishing a lot of these old Victorian houses and bringing them up to historic date, you know.
That's right. I mean, San Francisco is certainly noted for its Victorian architecture. And it was one of the first places where in the 1970s, people started appreciating these old houses and buying them in very derelict condition and fixing them up. And that became a big part of the defining of the culture of San Francisco and the whole preservation movement, too.
So how did you wind up finding your way all the way from San Francisco to New Orleans, which also has its own unique cultural milieu down there?
Well, that's correct. That's sort of a long story, but I'll put it this way. It was sort of predetermined. When I left the South and moved to San Francisco, I kind of expected never to come back. But when that day happened, I'd always said, well, if I ever move back to the deep South anywhere, I'm going to move to New Orleans because it's not really a Southern place. I always identified New Orleans really as being this marooned piece of Latin America in North America. And so I appreciated it for that, you know, from the beginning.
It's really almost like Casablanca in a way. I mean, it's this crossroads of cultures from all of these different places stuck in the middle of, you know, the South. But it could, I mean, it's got the flair of New York. It's got the flair of Paris. It's got a lot of different strains of culture overlaying it inside of its texture.
That's true. That's true. And it's the important thing and the strategic reason for New Orleans being what it is being on the Mississippi River and that connection to, you know, really the Caribbean. I mean, it was for the French, it was the connection between French Canada and Haiti, or Saint-Domingue, as it was known in the colonial period.
So let's get into this book. You've been in New Orleans for a while, and you've done a number of works on the New Orleans culture. Can you kind of give us step us up to how you got into this book? What was it that inspired this?
Well, I moved to New Orleans in 1991. I immediately started doing books about the architecture and the culture of South Louisiana. And there were three or four of those over the years. And prior to my moving to New Orleans, when I was 20 years old, shortly after I'd bought my first serious camera, I decided it would be a great idea to travel overland by car all across Latin America. So I left South Georgia. The one and only North American stop on that trip was New Orleans, and immediately made a beeline for Mexico, visited every country in Central America, went to Roatan Island in the Caribbean, and then continued on to Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia in South America. So it was this great overland trip. Again, I'm 20 years old, traveling around photographing. And prior to that trip, I had never been beyond Georgia, Florida, and Alabama. That was the extent of my travel. Mm-hmm. So I really went to Latin America before I had the chance to fully explore the United States and North America. So that became a very formative part of my life and where I really learned to do photography. And so I had come to appreciate New Orleans and South Louisiana as being connected to that world. This Creole, Catholic, French, and Spanish-speaking world that was really a separate history from Anglo-Protestant America. So I wanted to explore that connection, and that, of course, is not my idea. We all know that old adage of New Orleans is the northernmost Caribbean city.
Right.
But rather than remark upon it, I wanted to show it. I wanted to show it in pictures and in the imagery of the places, so you can really see how they're part of this one world.
And it seems almost from the photographs that the way that expresses itself, that uniqueness through their architectural structures and things, because it all comes out in that, it seems like.
Well, yes, that's sort of the backdrop to it all. I mean, it's the similarity of the way the cities are constructed. There's a similarity in terms of the perception of the street, for instance, is a quasi-public space.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about Mardi Gras in New Orleans, and it's just not about the efficient flow of traffic, you know?
Right.
It's about the way that life is lived in the streets and is a place of, you know, great theater, theatricality, and fantasy. So there are many of those commonalities, I think, between New Orleans and the things that you see in the Caribbean and Latin America.
Well, now, give us an idea of what in this exhibit folks are going to be able to come in and see. If you could kind of walk us through some of the different photos. Obviously, you can't do them all, but give us a taste of what we'll be able to enjoy while we're there.
Well, the exhibit consists of about 60 photographs from the book, which is approximately 200 images. So what you'll see is the striking visual similarities between New Orleans and South Louisiana and the places in the Caribbean that I went to, which included Haiti, Cuba, Panama, Cartagena and Colombia, and so forth. And you see the links between these places. And you actually literally get lost, I think, in that you're in New Orleans 1 minute, and then you're in Cartagena, or you're in Havana, or Santiago de Cuba, or Ciudad de Panama. So you get this cultural experience of seeing the interconnectedness of the Creole world.
How many exhibits are going to be, Lisa, maybe you can help this, how many exhibits or photos are there going to be in this total exhibit?
Yeah, there are about 60 photos, along with some personal objects, too, that belong to Richard and that are part of his story of his travels.
So you've collected up a nice. Now, how do you go about going through? I mean, the book has got a few more than 60 photos in it, I presume. And so how do you go about, I mean, what's the painstaking process of going, I want that, but I can't have that one, you know? Is it literally that? I mean, it's like, you know.
Sometimes it is.
So Solomon cutting the baby in half.
But I tried to get the images that would be most representative. It is kind of a distillation.
Right.
And so I wanted to be sure to include all the different facets of New Orleans and that I had photographed and make the visual comparisons with all the other places in the Creole world that I explored, but also try to just tell a visual narrative, tell a story in pictures. I think more than anything else, I'm a photo essayist.
Right.
More so than being just a photographer. Right. I love the process of visual storytelling.
Mm-hmm. So as you go through this book, it's not just architecture, it's the people, it's the culture, it's their art. It's every facet of their life, it looks like, that connects them, you know, throughout this region, all the little strains, you know, it's the grits that run through everything, you know. And could you explain some of those connections that you see between like the people in New Orleans and the people in Cartagena?
Well, I think one very obvious connection that I really tried to play up in the exhibit is there's a specific urban pattern that you see in every Latin American city. At the center of the old town, there's a square, mm-hmm. a plaza. The most prominent building on that plaza is going to be the Catholic Church.
Right.
And so if you think about New Orleans, there's Jackson Square and there's St. Louis Cathedral right. on the square, the most prominent building there. So it immediately identifies it as a Catholic Creole place at its heart. You see a lot of other similarities if you go to the cemeteries, mm-hmm. which I love to do. And every place I go, I go there. And so you see the similarities in the ritual of burial. And in New Orleans, that's one of the most popular tourist destinations. People mm-hmm. want to go to St. Louis 1, 2, and 3, and right. Lafayette Cemetery, and all the others. And they're noted as being so distinctive. But go to any Latin American town, the cemeteries look identical to that. So, again, there's a good examples of within the physical space of the city. Here are these places, the cemeteries, the public square, where you see these commonalities.
So what may be for American tourists visiting New Orleans a unique kind of cemetery, actually, if you go throughout this area in the Creole world, it's actually not a unique type
of
cemetery.
It's only unique in one aspect. It's in North America.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so that's,
other than that, it's ordinary.
Yeah. We have a historian friend of the station who would love the cemetery aspect since that's where he goes for a lot of his historical data.
Well, it's great because the cemeteries never get redeveloped. You
right,
know?
Exactly.
They retain that history. They're permanent in that sense, and they present a beautiful timeline. And what I particularly enjoy doing in St. Louis One is seeing the languages on the tombs. And it is very, very common to see within one extended family across time, you'll see that they were speaking French, Spanish, and English
right.
over time. And you'll see all of those languages on the tombs and reflected in the names of the individuals who are buried there.
a good way of getting a grip on the genesis of life as we evolve in this country, really, is to go to the cemetery and look at the material and look at who's come.
It's a great way to look at history.
Yeah, exactly. So now, for those who want to venture down to New Orleans, you have a lot of work on display down there. Can you tell us where they might see your work down there?
Sure. Everything, every print that is in this exhibit is also in the permanent collection of the Historic New Orleans Collection that is a sponsor for this project. I'm also represented by a gallery for fine photography for print sales, and that's on Charter Street at 251 Charters in the French Quarter. So you can see work there. And if you go in any bookstore in New Orleans, you'll see several books that I've done about New Orleans and South Louisiana, including Creole World.
It's a great way to learn. I've done a little bit of traveling throughout the United States, and the one thing for me, if I don't walk away with a deeper understanding of who we are as a people, then I've failed in my mission for the vacation, if you understand what I mean. So
that's right.
I don't want to go to a vacation just to be like the guy in Vacation who just kind of bobs his head at the Grand Canyon and says, okay, I've seen it, let's move on. You know, that's not my idea. I want to learn something out of the
right
process.
I think not only is there great physical beauty, but also the cultural beauty and the diversity of the country. I think that we all too often tend to either downplay or overlook mm-hmm. all the diverse influences that have made the United States what it is, and we certainly see that in a place like New Orleans as being very distinctly different than so many other places.
And also, I think how we've evolved from then till now, what the transition, what the learning experiences, our common experiences, our battles, everything else that have shaped who we are today come into focus, and you get a greater understanding, at least for me, of who we are today versus who we were then.
Exactly.
Well, for Lisa, I'm going to turn to you now, because the Meadows not only has this going on, but you've got some other things. But tell us about the process of selecting and hanging this this exhibit.
Well, luckily for us, the Historic New Orleans Collection made it very easy, because we had seen that they had done this exhibit and we were very interested in it. It looked beautiful, and they have just been fantastic to work with. To bring the work to us, it's only been exhibited as this complete show there, and then also at the Frost Museum in Miami. And thanks to the Frost, they gave us Spanish translations. So this is an exhibit that is completely bilingual, which we're really happy to present to the community, too. We also have some, in addition to our opening tomorrow night, which I want to invite all listeners, everybody in the region to. It's completely free, open to the public. It's from 5 to 7 p.m. There's parking in front of and behind the museum, so come on over to Centenary's campus. We have live music by another artist, Bill Bryant, who has an exhibit up in the Turner Arts Center, and he'll speak a little bit tomorrow. We've got great food and drink sponsored by the Friends of the Meadows. We also have two other exhibits, too. So we're going from this very fine art of Richard's to some very low art, I would say, which is hysterical.
Funny art.
Funny. On the different side of the spectrum, it is Awkward Family Photos, the exhibition. So if you know the website, what you will see in the galleries are 200 photos that are really some of the cream of the crop from that website. So it will have people in tears of laughter, I think.
And what cracked me up, because you told me these were all self-submitted. This is not somebody photobombing a friend of theirs. This is like, I got this photo of me and it's ridiculously hilarious, and I'm going to submit it and be the butt of my own joke, essentially.
Exactly. I mean, otherwise, I think it would be the prime example of bullying.
Yeah, right. So this is self-bullying.
Yes, yes. And then on a different kind of emotional scale, we have a rather depressing exhibit, frankly, called Cutting Down the Tree of Life, which was conceived by an alumna, Emily Foltz. And it combines these beautiful Haitian paintings in our collection of trees of life, along with scenes of Haiti's deforestation, by a street photojournalist, Jonathan Auk, and he's up in New York City, and he's going to be coming in March. So we'll tell you about that later as that date comes up.
All right. Well, you get in contact with us. We'll get you on.
Will.
So, you got a book signing to go to shortly. And are there going to be some other book signings going on with this opening?
Well, so from 5 to 7 tomorrow night, if you come on out, you'll get to hear Richard at 6 p.m. and he'll be there to sign books. So you can pick up a book at the Meadows. And then later on, too, in association with the exhibit on March 2nd at 6:30 p.m., one of Centenary's professors, Dr. Lauren Demarath, who's a professor of sociology, he's going to be presenting his scholarly research in a talk called The Good Social Life in Lesser Developed Countries. And it's particularly focused on his research in Ecuador.
Okay, so that's going to all be tied together. So, well, any final thoughts you want to share other than, folks, get out to these museums. They've got so much going on all across this. I mean, we're so rich and blessed with so much
great museum
work. So what would you like to share with folks?
Well, I would just like to say that I'm thrilled to be here in Shreveport for the opening tomorrow night, and I hope everybody can come out and experience a little something from the Creole world and to see the book.
Come on,
as well as
some
exhibit.
Visual jambalaya, you know. So
right, exactly.
Great.
Well, Lisa and Richard, thanks so much for stopping by today.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thanks for having us.
That was photographer Richard Sexton, who joined me along with Lisa Nicoletti, who's a professor of art history and visual studies and the co-director of the Meadow Museum. They join me in our Knoll Foundation studios to talk about the exhibit Creole World, Photographs of New Orleans and the Latin Caribbean Sphere by Richard Sexton. It opens tomorrow at the Meadow Museum of Art, the Meadows Museum of Art at Centenary Campus. And you can find out complete information on their website at www.centenary.edu/meadows or give them a call at 318-869-5040. That's 318-869-5040. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett.